All right, hello and welcome to the YouTube podcast, episode number 74. We're at all the way up to 74, and talking all things YouTube. And on this episode, we're talking album news, specifically album review. We had a little quick B-side, anxious to talk about it, recording last week, last episode with Matt and Ian. But this time we set them aside, as it were, and got some more educated panelists, I'll say. No, I'm just kidding. We actually prepared a little bit this time instead of just quickly hitting record and talking off. Like, Matt had only heard the album once, I think, at that point. And so with me for this episode, from my right, I don't know where they are in your world, but to my right is Christopher. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
And bottom right around the clock, I guess, Colin back to the show. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
And to Sula, completing the, what, square? Circle? No, square. I don't know.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Yes, square. Brady Bunch.
On the video version, folks can see Tasula's got a cool lemon thing in the background, lemon picture. I don't know. It's a little bit fuzzy on my end.
It's old advertising. I collect old ads of lemons.
With the
go figure
YouTube connection there. Yeah. Hopefully anybody listening is familiar enough to connect the dots on that one. So hopefully everybody out there, it's been now, 5 days? Songs of Experience is out. You've been digesting, listening, and like we talked about in episode 72, your experience of listening to a new U2 album. Briefly, maybe, folks, if you can tell us what your experience was like listening. How did you choose to listen to the album for the first time when it came out on Friday, or wherever you were in the world when it came out? We'll just do the circle again here. So Christopher, how, starting with you.
I listened to it in my office for the first time at school before I started teaching classes at 9:30 in the morning. I had about an hour in my office, so I listened to bits and pieces of it, and also in the car on the way to work. And then when I got home, I put on the headphones and really listened carefully at home, using several pairs of headphones, open and closed back. So I got different sound experiences from it.
So is that not all at the same time, I assume?
No. All right.
I'll ask the dumb questions. All right, Colin, how about you?
I listened to, I made the choice to listen to Songs of Innocence again first before Songs of Experience, because I'd heard about all the callbacks that were in the latter. So I really thought I owed it it seemed like the proper way to listen to it was to listen to it as a kind of a double album. So that's how I approached it. So it was good, because I hadn't listened to Innocence in a while. All the way through, not in like a year or two. So listening to it back to back was a really great way to do it. And it actually, we'll get into it, the other, my reaction to it later, but that's how I listened to it. Yes.
That's a save it for the podcast. Thanks. So, Tasula, how about you?
Yeah. The first time I heard it, I was still in New York. So I was in the apartment I was staying in New York, and right at midnight, right when it started downloading into my iTunes, I turned off the lights and listened. And then I did what Colin did today for the first time. And I listened to Songs of Innocence back to back on vinyl with Songs of Experience on vinyl as well.
Nice.
Did I mention I have three different types of albums? I have digital, CD, and vinyl.
I'm still waiting for my CD. There is something about that, having a physical version, that feels like it's real, although I've listened to it a bunch, but yeah.
The vinyl's really beautiful too.
Yeah, I know. I had never really wanted to get vinyl until I saw the promotional stuff for the vinyl one. It looks really nice.
It's an absolutely gorgeous piece. Gorgeous. Yeah. Translucent. It's awesome.
Yeah. All right. And so, just in case you've been living under a rock somehow and have missed any of the U2 promotional stuff that's been happening, worth just checking out. You can check out at U2.com for details and links and stuff like that. We won't go into great detail here, but Bono Edge were on Howard Stern yesterday, yeah, as we record. Adam was on BBC Radio today, I think, or it came out today. Bono and Edge were in the Berlin subway today. Berlin. Yeah.
That they were.
Bono
and on the subway. Bono drove the subway.
Yeah. That one's actually worth watching too. It's hilarious. Yeah. Just seeing them perform in the subway, and see Dallas Shoe in the background there, probably worried about guitar damage or whatever on the subway. But Bono and Edge also did release a promo video for their Omaze fundraising promotional effort slash thing for playing mini golf or putt-putt, as Edge put it, which is awesome. I have the, I forgot to cue that one up.
Promo.
It's, yeah, it's worth, it made me sad actually that they weren't on, because they were on SNL as well. That's the other thing I forgot to even have in the notes. There's been so many things, but that they don't get involved in the skits on SNL ever, Saturday Night Live. So I don't know. I'm sure it's a decision they make. I'm sure SNL is open to artists appearing on.
I think this time it was probably more about the timing because they were in Los Angeles the whole week. And then they just got there like the day before, like when I did, and there wouldn't have been time to rehearse all that. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, what was the last one? I think, is there anything else? That's all I had in my notes here quickly.
Well, playing in the street in New York as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. That you were attempting to get to. You arrived a few minutes late.
12 minutes behind.
So, yeah, who knows where, I guess just make sure you check your shower or check wherever they might show up somewhere else.
Don't get people excited now.
Just in terms of listener follow-up from the last episode, just a few folks who sent in some tweets about how they choose to listen. Dean Kelly at Dean Kelly U2 said, I take the day off work when a U2 album is released and it will be on repeat all day long. At She Wore Lemon 3 says, whenever a new album comes out, I need to go to the store to buy it, sit in the car and study the artwork and listen in the car, soaking in every minute. And Acton Bubbles, sorry. I lay in bed, no lights, and just let it play. The world is dead to me at that time. And
nice.
Elise One said, we had asked, I think Matt and I on the previous episode asked about sending snaps in of where you are in the world when you listen to it. And she's got a picture chair, breeze, glass of wine, earbud perfection along the ocean somewhere. So every breaking wave as she takes in the new album. So nice. Very cool. And yeah, we joked sort of about sending in pictures or selfies of yourself listening to the podcast wherever you happen to be in the world. That's always cool. You can use hashtag AskIU2 on Twitter to do that and or anything else. Any comments, questions, suggestions, even constructive criticism for the podcast, use hashtag AskIU2 and we'll collect those all into the program proper. So for our roundtable today, though, we wanted to spend the most of the episode doing a proper song by song review as we've done in the past. We've done every album by U2 to this point. You can check the archives at goodstuff.fm/ATU2 and listen to everything from Boy to after this, Songs of Experience. And so we have various staffers from at U2 on to talk. And it was a bit of a mad scramble to see who was going to be on this episode. So we might end up having a second episode talking about it because lots of folks understandably want to chat. So I'll just make a note too that unlike previous episodes, we're not going to have any of the audio from the songs from the album interspersed as we talk about it, just because U2's or management or record company, somebody, some algorithm is being a little extra aggressive. And so we don't want to set off any lawyer notes or takedown notices or anything like that that would otherwise upset the U2 gods. But so before we get into the song by song review, I'm just curious, Colin kind of started in on it, but your overall sort of like gut reaction to that first time you heard it or second time or however many times it took before you had a gut reaction. Hopefully it wasn't too negative, but just your first time to hearing the album and your sort of thoughts without going into a lot of detail on each song, but starting again, we'll just keep doing the clockwise thing here. Christopher, with you.
Sure. I listened to it in the car and at school in my office, but I was kind of distracted. So I listened to it again when I got home with my wife over our big stereo speakers, and it hit me that this album was brilliant. And then the album has gotten exponentially better with every listen since then. It's wonderful. I love it.
All right, Colin, how about you?
Relief and joy. because Songs of Innocence just doesn't hold up for me that well. I mean, I like it, but I don't love it. And just the production on this album knocked me out. I was just like, oh, this is great. This is the U2 I love. This is what I want more of. And I'm getting it. So I was very happy on the first listen.
And Tasula, how about you?
So I'm just flip what Colin said, and that's me. Like, I love Songs of Innocence. I had a visceral reaction to it the first time I heard it. I like this album. I don't love it.
Yeah. And that's, I'm in the love, more love than hate, but I was a little worried hearing it for the first time. There was a few moments where I was like, I'm not sure where this is exactly headed, and the sound doesn't feel, I don't know, for lack of a better term, right, but obviously it's just all subjective. There's no right and wrong here. But there was kind of like that moment of, okay, I've been waiting for this, and this is what I'm hearing, and I'm not sure. But for me, on repeated listens, it's definitely like, I think Christopher said, my likeness for it, what's the right word, my love for it, whatever, has grown with each listen, and as often happens with you too. And I think it was Ian who said on the previous episode, or in our Slack somewhere, I'll quote him if he isn't, it wasn't on audio, but he had said something to the effect of he wasn't sure if you two had an album like this in them still. And that's, to me, was kind of the greatest relief. And maybe that's what Colin was alluding to as well. It's just kind of like, you're unsure, you hear the Blackout, you hear You're the Best Thing About Me, you hear the singles that they release and stuff, and you're kind of like, there's hints of great stuff, and there's hints of like, not so sure stuff. And so overall, as a complete production, I'm like, sweet. They're still U2.
Exactly.
The singles that were released, for me, only hinted at the album. That's a good use of that word, because you get songs, and we'll get into it, of course, but for me, songs like Little Things and Love Is Bigger, and it's just, those blew me out of the water. And then Red Flag Day for me is also really really hitting home.
All right, well then let's dive right in, because we're anxious to obviously talk about songs. I was going to mention just at Buzz One Daddy, nice username, but said, I would have thought if I had the album, in response to how they listened to it, but so he had pre-ordered it through YouTube.com and doesn't have the album yet, nor has he heard it. So I do not sadly have anything to contribute. Boycotting the podcast until the CD shows up. This could take a while. So hopefully I tweeted back to him like that U2 is now costing us listeners, or U2.com, sorry.
Yeah.
But he's
blame him though.
No, exactly.
Spoil stuff for him, right?
Yeah, totally. So I know he's mostly joking. I mean, he's frustrated with U2.com, obviously, in the store and stuff, but...
Who isn't?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know within our own staff, there's people who are waiting for special deliveries of stuff and things, and it's...
I just got my physical releases yesterday.
Right.
So, and the shirt. So.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
That's my first merchandise sighting, I think. So... Oh, the boss checked in.
I actually went to a store and bought it, so I didn't pre-order anything. I actually just went to Best Buy and got it. And
the old-fashioned way.
Old school.
That again.
Yeah. All right. So starting off track number one, Love Is All We Have Left. Christopher, I think you were... Oh, no, Colin. Sorry. We've got. I told you I'd screw up the initials. Didn't take it the song one. Go ahead, Colin.
So right when I hit play on this thing, I thought, uh-oh, it's in shuffle mode, because this wouldn't open a U2 album. You know, it just kicks,
right,
because it kicks right in with that drone, whatever that music, you know, the organ or whatever keyboard effect, whatever it is we're hearing, just kicks right into it. Doesn't fade in. It just gets right to it. And I just thought, uh-oh, this is what am I doing? Oh, this is the first track. Wow. Okay, this is not going to be the album that I thought it was. This is going to be that, like, cool. This is going to be U2 kind of experimenting again. And then they bring in that great, that sort of, well, not usually not great, the auto-tune effect, that, which it normally is a kiss of death for any song. The way they use it here, it's like U2 sort of discover, you know, going back to like 70s prog rock sound that I think is pretty cool thing to put in there. So I just, I love that this kicks off the album, because now I don't know what I'm going to hear, aside from the odd single here and there that I've already heard. Now I'm going to be surprised. And so like, I love that this is the opening, of the album.
Yeah. I think, I'm guessing from Tasula shaking her head, she's not feeling that same love, but, for the track, but before, I'll let her get in on this one too, but I was just impressed after listening to the whole album. I realized how many songs actually have strings, synth, whatever, you know, variations on that on them. Which
wasn't it?
Yeah, there's that. There's Bon or Adams using bass pedals of some sort. To me, the autotune, I'm with you, Colin, in that I don't like the idea of autotune, but I think they used it artistically on this as opposed to like any sort of corrective, you know, trying to make Bono sound better than he actually does or anything like that. Or maybe he actually couldn't hit those notes and they completely disguised it with autotune just to make it over obvious that or overdone or whatever. But Tasula, what's your view on
Bono's voice doesn't need distorting. That's my view. And I really thought, I mean, in a way it's good it was this first song because I had bad expectations and then stuff got better right after. Because I thought if this is how the whole album sounds, I may be out. but I just thought, like, did Phil Spector get a hold of this? Like, why is this so overproduced? Like, this could be a very beautiful, quiet, lovely opening. And yeah, not my favorite. I'm sure they'll open the tour with it, though.
Yeah, you think so?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
They do that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would think closing the album, closing the tour with this, I think would make more sense.
Oh, you guys went distorted. I couldn't hear what you said.
Yeah, closing it with this, 13 obviously goes sort of that way as well. But
right. That makes sense.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But there's a hint of the callbacks and stuff. I don't know how we'll discuss this throughout each song. Obviously, there's a hint of Iris in the bass line that I hear, and that could be intentional. It happens to be that same progression. And Adam isn't. I'll say this. And then hear the second part, because before you send me hate mail, like, Adam isn't the most innovative bass player at times, but on this album, I feel like when I first listened, I was like, holy crap, Adam is like,
he does shine.
He upped his game on this one big time. Like,
Adam is playing the best he's ever played. His lines are full of character and they're funky and they're powerful. And, you know, some lines are just the repeated notes. But, you know, he does have a lot of songs on this album where he lets loose. Like, the Blackout is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Don't get ahead of ourselves.
We'll get there.
Right. Okay. Next up, Lights of Home. This is you as well, Colin. Start us off.
Yeah. So I think this is a case of an album peaking a little too early. But that's not to say the rest of the album is downhill from here. I'm just saying, like, this is the peak of the album and it's at track two. That never happens. Track two is never like the peak of any album, real usually. But I guess I'm not alone. I've seen a lot of other people saying that this is their favorite song on the album. And I think for good reason. It's a great melody. The production is solid, but then you get to that ending. And it's just, I get tears in my eyes when I hear it. I get excited. I get giddy. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's a repeat, you know, it's a repeat of the end of Iris. And so, I love that callback to it. And I thought today, like, what if they close the show with this song?
Yeah.
I mean, closing the show with something, I know they like to close the show with a hymn, you know, like one or 40 or something like that. But like, imagine closing it with something like this. It'd be like the Elevation tour when they closed with Walk On and just like ending the show on a big high and just, cutting to black and that's it, the end. I think that would be amazing. I know there's some controversy, I guess, you know, over where they're getting part of the guitar riff from. I know the band Haim is involved in this song. I don't care. I think it's great. I don't care if it's not 100% U2. I don't care. This is by far my favorite song on the album.
Yeah, they are. I mean, at least they're credited involved with the production in some form on the liner notes. They're actually there. So it's not, I guess the controversy maybe is like, what the heck? Why is another musician playing when it should be Edge or whatever, or Adam. Yeah. And, I don't have a problem there. We'll get to the other controversy that I have more of an issue with, I had written down too that, but funny because the first time I listened to it, I wrote down this is Edge's best riff yet in my notes, which maybe it wasn't actually his riff in actuality, but either way, as long as he can play it, and I think the lyrically too, it hits all the I'll say this with love, like all the religious folks, the right notes for those folks with like Oh, Jesus, if you're still my friend, what the hell you got for me? And I shouldn't be here because I should be dead. There's a lot of like that, that's Bono side, the spiritual side, I guess, of Bono sort of seeking. And if it's a discussion with maybe St. Peter at the gates or whatever, but it's a lot of those kind of right notes too, I think, for the, on the lyric side of it. And yeah.
The end of this one has a very Hey Jude feel to me, the whole na 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 part part of Hey Jude. So I can totally see this one being a show closer, and they just walk out singing it, and the whole crowd is going to be singing that for, well, 15 minutes in the arena, and then walking out to the car, and then sitting in traffic.
Yeah, the new 40 is. Yeah,
I don't think it'll be a closer, but it is my favorite on the album. I completely agree. It's super strong.
There's the other notes I had was a slide guitar solo kind of echoes a bit of Kite sound to me, but again, that's just whether it's intentional or that's just Edge.
And all Kite four and of them get to shine on this too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can hear all four different, you know.
Lots of Home reminded me a little bit too of Cedarwood Road. Just the aggressive character of it, but also there's a little bit of Kite was in there, and the slide guitar was reminiscent of Magnificent as well
for me. Yeah, right. Yeah, cool. All right, next one up is "You're the Best Thing About Me," which is Colin as well. I guess Colin's introduction is our.
I didn't initially take this one, but I decided what the heck, no one else is putting their name on it. So I don't know. But when I first heard this song, I just thought, okay. All right. I guess this really is going to be Songs of Innocence Part 2. And it's, to me, like I don't think it's a bad song by any stretch. It's just, I just thought, this sounds like a B-side to Are You Gonna Wait Forever? You know, it's like a B-side to a B-side. Like this, it just didn't do anything for me. Catchy, yes, but I don't know. When I heard it in the context of this album, though, and I really paid more attention to the production of it, I really had a greater appreciation for it. I don't know, maybe it's the sound quality of hearing it on the internet or, you know, on my computer first, but then like finally listening to it on headphones, there's echoes in the background, there's all these like Eno-esque little flourishes that I picked up on a little bit more, that made me just kind of sit up and listen to it and just ignore the lyrics. This is not Bono's finest hour as a lyric writer at all, but just paying attention to this, the simplicity of the production and the density of the production, it's become a much better song now to me than I thought it would be. So I'm happy to say I'm not hitting the skip button on this one like I thought I would.
You don't like Whatever Happened to, or The Best Thing That Had Ever Happened to a Boy is not ringing out for you?
Well, just like right at the beginning. I mean, what it's, you know, when you look so good, the pain in your face doesn't show. When you look so good and baby, you don't even know. I mean, it's like if I gave you a multiple choice question and said, okay, who wrote these lyrics? A, Bon Jovi, B, Bono, C, Bruno Mars, D, Christina Aguilera, and you'd be like, well, it's definitely not B. It's got to be one of these.
Exactly. Right.
Oh my God. Wait. Yeah. Right. So, okay. So right there, I'm like, all right, I'm done with this song already, but, I can appreciate the song on another level, which makes me like it now. So
the film video changed my impression of this song a lot, and also the fact that my kids absolutely just love it and want me to sing it to them all the time, like just all the time. And my wife and I now are just like, we have 12 other ones now. Can we listen to something else for just a second? But it's not my favorite song. It is catchy as all get out. But I think I think the videos helped me, but it's an okay one for me.
Yeah. Sula, how about you?
That's as much as I have to say about it.
Yeah. It's like a pop. It's a poppy side of you too, which it doesn't really get my engine going or whatever either. And I mean, again, Adam's really good. I had written down Adam's baseline driving this thing. And so, but all right, so let's move on to the next track, Get Out of Your Own Way, which I don't know what we call them all. Are they actually singles? I don't know. I forget which is which, but anyways, it was released before.
That one definitely is.
Yeah. So, Christopher, this was you, I think.
Yeah. Well, the first thing about this one was the title and the lyrics. It connected with me instantly. I mean, it's something that I'm trying to tell myself all the time, is just to get out of my own way and just, you know, be and do. And so from a lyrical standpoint, it hit me the second it was released. And then just listening to it, the swell into the chorus, it's really effective for me. I wish it were a little bit longer. Like, I wish they did something a little bit better with the bridge, or the interlude. And I actually wish it had a bridge, but I like this one, and I love how it bleeds into American Soul with the Kendrick Lamar rap.
Yeah, that to me, yeah, completes the picture of where the song is gonna be potentially live, I guess, and how it feels and things like that. So, yeah.
I've been hearing a lot of people compare it to Beautiful Day.
Yeah,
it has
definitely
the same kind of structure to it, and I like, and I'm fine with if this song like took the place of Beautiful Day in the tour, I'd be so cool with that. Yeah, I love it. I think it's terrific.
You might get tweets about that one, but.
I was gonna say, Phil might come at you for that.
I'm rarely on Twitter, so go for it. You know,
he won't see it if you send the hate.
That's right.
Yeah, Ken Cunningham in the chat says City of Blinding Lights to it has some bit kind of feel to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Good sweeping thing.
I hear that.
Yeah, I can't place it right now because I don't have it. I'm not listening to it, but I'd written down too. I love the Edge's guitar tone and the solo bridge, and then the chorus too of with Edge just singing like. In the subway, even hearing Edge just like belt out the O's over the chorus and stuff. And it, at the intro feels a little cheesy and I don't know, weak or whatever ish, but by the time the chorus hits and stuff, it's to me, it's like a, you can just picture 40,000 people or whatever screaming along with that. And, gets you the U2 chills as it were. So,
and you could tell from when they did it on the street in New York, and Bono was like egging the people on to do that certain little OO part. Yeah. That's what he'll do to us in concert, which will make it better.
And we're going to do it, right?
Absolutely. Of course. Could have done it the other night if I made it in time. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
All right. Next up is American Soul. This is you, Tasula.
I love this song. Happy to say that I love this song. And I love that they recycle the volcano riff. It's fantastic. And it hits every... In fact, I think, well, I hope that people that didn't love Volcano may embrace it more now hearing this. Kind of like, it's like it developed into something else. It has a second life. And I thought it was great. It's great on Saturday Night Live. I can't wait to hear it live.
Yeah, for me, I can attest to be one of those people who I wouldn't go so far as like Matt saying I hate Volcano, and he's come around, as we heard in the last episode, he's come around to liking Volcano again. So
I always liked
it. But it wasn't like my favorite, and they didn't play it live
totally my favorite.
They played what, live? Once or twice?
No, they played it like six or seven times because Jill heard it, Aaron heard it, like half of our staff has heard it.
Okay, but in the context of like the 100 cities or whatever, they played it relatively few times.
It was in the minority, yes.
But anyways, it's not hard to imagine that this will obviously get, like you said, a second life in live performance now inside of American Soul. And I think it's a great callback to that, and then building sort of from that into something else. And the only thing, and I'll throw this out here just for, I'm the non-American on the panel, and we have a lot of American listeners and a lot of international listeners, but is the... One thing that I kind of, when I was watching the Saturday Live performance, is like, obviously you two and Bono especially have a great love for America. Nothing wrong with that. Is it time to like, I was in a joking kind of way, is it time for maybe another country's turn as U2's obsession? And I kind of wonder sometimes with like Larry or Adam particularly, just being like, okay, do we need to wrap ourselves in the flag again? Do we have to do that one, the American flag or whatever, one more time? And I'm not like, don't send me, I love America. It's a great country.
You have a point. I have to admit, I kind of cringed when I saw that damn megaphone come out. I have to be honest. Like, I was not thrilled to see it. We are not having a great moment here in our country right now. No. So I'm not down with the celebration just yet, but like for commentary and for critique, which is half of this album, it's fair, you know, but yeah, I, to speak to your point, they went like Ireland, 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 America, Ireland, Ireland, America, America, America. And it's like, go ahead, go to Canada. You like Trudeau. Knock
yourself out. Yeah. And like, I get
about them.
I get the idea of like a commentary and stuff and too. That's like, I think it's interesting, and it's, I was trying to like put myself in the seat of somebody who's like a casual YouTube fan who dips in and back and out and like, oh, here he goes again on America and like whatever. And so, yeah, it's, I think it's a apt thing to focus on, and there's nothing wrong with that. And especially this time and place or whatever, but yeah, maybe Finland needs a turn.
Well, and they know their audience. I mean, where are they making their money? Let's yeah. be honest here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, we'll find out, you know, in about 5 or 6 months, you know, what the final intent is for the song when they do it live. Are they going to do it as a critique of things that are going on in our country, or is it going to be another Joshua Tree tour, Kumbaya, you know, we're all welcome here, kind of thing?
A little bit,
you know,
of both.
Or are they going to do a full on, you know, another full on like Bullet the Blue Sky anti-Trump kind of thing? That's what I'm most curious about with this song, and when they start performing it live,
which does have the potential to be the sort of Bullet the Blue Sky, whatever, yeah, new version of that, or yeah, whatever you want to call it, I guess. And I don't see them pulling Bullet the Blue Sky out, but it could potentially sort of replace that in terms of angry, ferocious songs.
Once they take out all the Joshua Tree, coming out.
And once again, it's track 4 on the album, which Bullet the Blue Sky was, and Love and Peace
Good
or
Observation.
Else was number 4. And yeah, so there's some little bit of callback there too.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting when they released American Soul on iTunes for download. I was in Austria, and I woke up in the morning and I checked my phone, and I was like, oh my God, they have a new single out. And I downloaded, and you know, I was walking the streets of Graz to the conference playing American Soul, and I was like, oh my God, this is totally the new Bullet. You know, I felt that aggression and that anger, and the image of that megaphone was in my head. When I was listening to it for the first time. So I can totally see it taking the place of Bullet, or functioning like Bullet does or did in the shows.
Copy editor 1971, I think it was Michelle, and she says Bullet that's must Michelle. Always remain. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's
yeah, I thought so. So but yeah, it'd be hard to picture them doing a concert without Bullet, and same goes for like Streets, but who knows? Maybe they've got a completely other system with the Joshua Tree tour, and we'll, that's a discussion for another episode when we start prophesying or predicting the
Did you hear that Bono has not listened to the Joshua Tree since 1987? He said that on Howard Stern.
Yeah.
He has not listened to the album in a row consecutively since then.
And he must have done it for the tour though, right?
Like No, they asked him.
Oh, okay. Not. I didn't get to listen to all.
He cherry picked certain songs to try to remember what to do. Obviously, he had to relearn them.
Yeah.
The ones that aren't already in heavy rotation, of course. But no, he said he didn't, and he wouldn't, because he cringes at his own voice.
Yeah. All right. So moving along, next up is Summer of Love, which is also Tesula.
Ooh, this is the one that reminds me of Gautier. And I, in a good way, like,
oh yeah,
good
it,
call.
Doesn't it? Do
good call.
It?
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm vindicated. Yeah. I'm vindicated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got the music professor on my side for this one. It really is. It really is like very reminiscent of what's it called? His big hit, Somebody.
I used to know. Yeah.
Somebody used to know.
Yeah. Somebody used to know. Thank you. Yeah, but
that's
I
a
love
great
it.
Song.
I think it's
a great
I
song.
Think it's a great. I think that's a great song, and I think this is a great song. And I'm happy. This is the kind of experimenting that I like you two to do. And I liked it from the first listen, and it only gets better for me every time I hear it.
What if? And I know you know this, but what if I said to you, it's not actually you two that did the experimenting? No, I'm just poking fun a little bit. Obviously,
I would say they're experimenting by risking their reputation using it.
Yeah. So it's, I was tweeting.
That doesn't bother me. It really doesn't bother me.
Yeah. And I don't, so what we're getting at is, it's been revealed or whatever. Like, not, there's no big hidden secret here, but because One Republic, the Ryan Titor, the guy who produces One Republic or is in One Republic, also produced the album or helped produce a lot of the songs on the album. Tweeted a while ago, a year ago or whatever, that this song called Summer of Love that One Republic was doing. And if you listen to it, it sounds pretty much like the exact, actually sounds like, this is what is funny to me. It sounds like the exact riff, like they didn't even re-record it almost, but I don't know, Christopher, I don't know if you've listened to it that closely to compare, but I'm sure somebody has, and they can send us a tweet or whatever, and that's fine. But, So that it's based on a song that was written for One Republic originally, and then they obviously reworked it and changed it and all that kind of stuff. And that's all good, well and good. I don't have a problem with that personally. I'm sure lots of that happened with Daniel Lanois. And
you can just see Bono like strutting across the stage during this. It's going to be so fun live.
Yeah. The part that kind of irks me, I guess, is it feels like they're like, in contrast to the Haim riff, which is credited, they didn't credit anything with either Ryan Tedder.
Well, maybe they came up with it and gave it to them, and now they're stealing it back. How do you know? We're not in those,
well, see,
we're not in those videos.
And really, the point is, if One Republic and Ryan Tedder doesn't have a problem with you two using it, then there's no problem.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. And that's
probably like the best day of their life, right? Like, yeah. It would, if you two used my riff, I would not have a problem with it. Tell you
that. But if they didn't pay you a cent for it?
I'm not trying to invent controversy. The thing that bothers me about like the witch hunt is that we don't know. When we know, then we can form an opinion about it. We don't know.
Yeah. No, the only part of it that bugs me is just that they weren't included in the liner notes as a, like an obvious nod to whatever Ryan Tedder had with it. And maybe that you're right. Maybe U2, Bono, whatever wrote it. They tried it as a One Republic song, and then it didn't work out for whatever reason, and then U2 took it back or whatever. And that's
they toured for quite a while together. That's not completely out of the question. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, it's certainly possible, and maybe we'll see what happens when they play it live. Even too, if they play it live, I guess assuming they do, but. And how that all plays out exactly and what happens. So
I'm hearing two things. When I hear this song, I hear two things that are very striking to me musically. The percussion part of it sounds a little like the Zombies song Time of the Season. If you remember the intro to that song, look it up and you'll see a kind of a similarity there. And also, the song by 10 Years After called, I had it right here. I'd Love to Change the World. Adam's bass is kind of very much similar to that. And it's interesting. I think this song kind of fits in thematically with those two songs as well. So there might be sort of an unconscious or conscious influence with the songs, from that era, the late 60s, which is when those were recorded. Kind of sneaking into the music and the production here.
Yeah, which it would make sense. Like, it sounds like it could be the riff even is like a playful In a Little While kind of riff, almost something along those lines with more, I guess, brightness to it or whatever. And there's an interesting, I think I pinged the U2 team or whatever at U2 team saying like, does it cut into the bridge really abruptly for you around the 2-minute mark? And then everybody said, yeah, it does. So it almost sounded like so abrupt that I was wondering if my digital copy was like corrupted or something, but there's kind of like a really abrupt cutoff there. And, which lends us or points to, I guess, how, what they've talked about in interviews and stuff and promotion, they're not hiding any of this kind of stuff, but how the album was like really pieced together over a long period of time with band members coming in and out in various studios and all over the place, kind of like stuff getting, yeah, that's sort of like, I think Sula, you had said it even, but like that overproduced element, which sounds really good on some songs and really like, okay, maybe this one skipped the quality control meter kind of thing or whatever. And so
just because it doesn't need it, because the songs are good enough to stand. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's so like Let It Be didn't need to be overproduced and they re-released it years later naked. But anyway, go ahead.
There you go. It all comes back to the Beatles.
It does.
All right. Let's keep moving before we'll end up with a 3-hour show. And sorry for folks, if you're having technical issues with the live stream, we'll do our best here to power through in the recorded version. Obviously we're not as heavily produced as U2 is and it won't take 3 years for 5 years for this album to be released. We'll have it out tomorrow, hopefully. But, next up is, Red Flag Day, which is, who are we going with? Christopher.
Yeah. This one was one that I fell in love with first time. And it has echoes for me from the War album. And lyrically, it of course references every breaking wave, and the fact that, it's about refugees, but you can interpret the lyrics from several different perspectives. And, that's not unique to this song, of course, but just the sound of it for me struck me and grabbed me right away. I love it. I love this song. This one's one of my favorites from this album.
This one took a long time to grow on me, but now I'll find myself sort of humming it or singing it in my head, like not actually listening to the music, obviously, and I'm like trying to place, like, where is that riff from? What am I? Because yeah, it doesn't sound like a U2 thing, even. It doesn't. It sounds like it would be like a B-side or like an early 80s song. There's a sort of a lot of synth stuff. There's a Police sound to me on it almost with.
Yeah. There's the Bruno Mars guitar riff in there. But anyway.
See, that one, I don't hear the, I know you had said that. I don't hear that one either,
but
I can get
Adam's
where you're
bass
coming from.
Stands out on this one too. It's so funky. And I mean, he drives a lot of their songs, but this one in particular, there's so much character in this line.
Yeah. I think, and even to like the Bruno Mars, I think there's like a production style, even if nothing else, on Edge's guitar that's sort of heavy, I don't know, slapback echo or something, but like where it's just like a really tight guitar riff that Edge doesn't usually play that style, that is reminiscent of one of the Bruno Mars songs that names escape me right now. But
I think it's a song with lazy in the title. That's all I can remember. I mean, it really is. There's a Bruno Mars song with lazy in the title, and that's the one I think I was thinking of when I heard it. But I get the references to like Touch or those like even pre-boy songs that I'm with you on, but I don't hear the war, the military, the hard rock. This is more pop than rock to me.
I understand the war thing. When I hear, especially when they sing the chorus and I hear Edge doing the vocal callback with Bono that, I could totally close my eyes and picture and see 1983 era U2 performing this. Not what wouldn't sound quite as polished. I mean, it would have more reverb and echo on it, but I just the energy
drums
of it. Yeah, right. But I definitely can hear a 1983 U2 in this one.
Yeah, it's got elements of that, and that's with 2017 production overlaying the early 80s style, I guess, or songwriting or whatever that they. Which again, it feels like a band. This album feels very much like a band that's very comfortable with who they are. This is what they sound like. Obviously, taking influence from younger producers, younger than them producers, and stuff like that, and mixing up how the arrangement might be or whatever, but very comfortable with sounding full on U2, but then also experimenting and being okay with that or whatever, I guess. So, anyways, I'm getting lost in wanting to just go listen to the music right now. So next up is the Showman, Little More Better. Where are we here?
Little More Better. Why'd they have to put that in there?
Yeah, that one doesn't.
Grammar, folks.
I sometimes wonder about that one, about those kinds of things.
Yeah, well.
So this one, like Red Flag Day, to me was like, I was like, oh, I'm not sure. But like almost the opposite of what Christopher said, where I was like, I don't know if I can like this song even. But again, it's one of those ones where it totally catches my, it's a little hook or whatever that gets stuck in my brain. And then I'm like, I need to hear that again. And then, it's growing on me. Yeah, and again and again and again. And luckily, I don't have to look at the title too often. Because that doesn't do anything for me either. I love the sort of fun they're having with the song, the recording. That I mean, I get Bono is a little bit of like his poking fun at himself, and that the audience, when you sing along, it makes it true. And like that, there's elements of it that'll be fun to sing along with in the concert and stuff like that. But
this one kind of it reminded me of Wild Honey a little bit. This one, I think, executed what it meant to execute better than Wild Honey did. Wild Honey was too much of a ripoff in my ears of another style. But this one had elements of that in it to me. And it reminded me also a little bit of In a Little While too. A little bit.
Yeah. A Little More Better.
Yeah.
Stop.
That's just for Michelle's work.
Now you're just doing it to bug us, yeah.
It seems like one of the ones that Bono often referred to in the lead up and the promotion and talking about lyrics and stuff. And it has that. And so it seems like something that'll be, they'll be looking forward to play live, but it does feel like a little almost too light-hearted in a sense for you two to play live. I don't know. We'll see. And maybe like a B stage thing.
The E stage or I stage, whatever the hell it's called this time. I think that it could work there.
Yeah.
I think it'd be like a song they switch out from night to night, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, the lyrics like singers cry about everything, and you look so good, a little more better, a little more. That sort of call and response stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing how they pull it off on the tour. That's for sure. So, all right. Speaking of on the tour, the song that we heard way back at the beginning of the Joshua Tree tour, "The Little Things That Give You Away."
I did not hear this one on Joshua Tree, and I purposely stayed away from all of the hints at Songs of Experience until you two actually released some stuff officially. And this is the one on the album that it destroys me every single time I listen to it. I mean, every single time I can't help but like bawl my eyes out. The build in the second half of the song, I mean, it's more than a 2-minute crescendo to the end. And it's just the way it's layered, and then it's so textured, and the lyrics again are a set of words that connected with me instantaneously. I cannot get enough of the song, and I can't stop crying when I hear the song. And I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yeah, Ken Cunningham in the chat said they really held back in the live version, which is totally true. And I think maybe, I don't know if it was the Edge trying to do the piano version live, and that wasn't it. Maybe that was originally how they had it in the recording, and then he went back after playing it live and was like, no, we need a guitar version. It just doesn't hold up when we play it with piano, or something. Who knows? But because it definitely felt sort of like weak or empty-ish at the beginning for sure. And once they got going, it was, you could tell there was something there, but it just needed something different. And so that's all right. I had in my notes of just like, if you heard this live before, Jimmy Kimmel, et cetera, the mix and the arrangement on the record is so much better than what we ever heard before. Adam's there way better, way more than what you heard, at least, I mean, the mixes I heard. And I can't remember what the solo sounds like right now, but I'd written down the outro solo is Edge's edgiest solo in a while. So whatever.
Oh, it is like drenched and dripping with echo. I mean, and every layer has its echo. So there are echoes of echoes. I mean, it's crazy. And I love, with a good pair of headphones, I mean, I get completely lost in that song. This is the high water mark. This is the climax of the album for me.
Nice. So there's sometimes at the end, the repeated sometimes.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's a good thing. It's not a.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Your reaction to it makes me like it even more, I think.
Yeah. That's where I think it's funny. Cause I love doing these because it often I'll find new things about a song that I'd kind of previously dismissed. Not that it was that way for me with Little Things, but I think hopefully for listeners too, they're kind of like, it gets me excited to go back and listen to it again because I hear things through other people's ears. And the lyric, the sometimes I wake at 4 a.m. while all the darkness is
that's
swarming.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the
you're
one.
Gonna start holy crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, Monday, I had my ears cleaned for the first time in my entire life. And
I want to hear about that offline, by the way. I think I need the same.
I feel like Superman now, and I can hear everything. So the first thing I did...
That's not actually one... I guess it is one of his Superman's powers. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, super hearing. Well, the first thing I did after we put the kids down was I listened to Songs of Experience because I was like, I'm sure I'm missing something. And I was in awe and shock listening to it. And then it got to Little Things, and I was just... I couldn't control any of my emotions. It was all coming out of my eyes. And my wife was on the phone in the other room. She came out and saw my face. She was like, "What the heck is wrong with you?" I was like, "It's the new year too." She's like, "You nerd." But yeah, awesome. I mean, there's so many sounds on this, and it's so subtly layered and textured. That's probably the thing I love most about this one.
So that's we can say a required listening experience for the next U2 albums. Everyone gets their ears clean before they right? take it in. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Let's keep moving. Next up is Landlady. Tasula, you wanted to start this one off?
I just can't get past the title. It's killing me because it's a good song. It is a good song. And I enjoy it. I like it. The more I hear it, the more I like it. It's nice and quiet. It's very, you know, we know where it's going and where it's going to end. And that's great. But the title is so bad. It's like, I can't separate the crappy title from the beautiful music. Why didn't somebody talk them out of that?
I know. I haven't tried to like think of a better think of a better lyric for Bono there, but it doesn't, that's why I tweeted, like, sort of asking people, like, is this a term that's of endearment in other countries? Like, is it a UK, Ireland thing? And it's not really. And like
your rent is due.
Yeah.
That's like, what it makes me think about. Right. Like, my rent's due.
Conjures up sort of like, in the movie, it would be like, stereotypically, it'd be like crotchety old lady or whatever, landlady, who's like banging on your door and, you know, yelling.
They're collecting your money.
It's the person you call and say, when are you going to fix my radiator?
Right.
Like, that's
exactly. That's exactly it, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we know his feelings for Allie at this point. Crystal clear.
Has he written any other songs?
Beautiful love story.
Yeah.
Beautiful love story. couldn't love them anymore. But yeah, I could have picked 17 titles better than this from what's in the lyrics.
Yeah. And even, so in the chorus too, it has that obviously refrain in there. And so I love the, I don't know what it would be called, the outro, the post chorus, the whatever, where the every wave that brought me, and he's like repeating a bunch of lines at the end of the song. I don't have them all in front of me here, but.
Like the elevation thing where he's just rhyming.
Yeah.
Illusion, and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a gimmick, and it works for Bono, at least for me. I know other people that drive
it does
mad,
work. No, it works.
But it works really.
Me too. Yeah.
Totally. That's the Adam Sandler, I think, sketch on SNL for Bono of just rhyming words or whatever over and over. But or maybe Jimmy Fallon. But it's aside from that little hook of the title and in the chorus, I love the song, and it again I keep coming back to it in my head lyrically or riff wise or whatever, but
I love the intro to that song. I mean, I love the Bono does not get enough credit as a storyteller in his songs sometimes, and I love when he takes that approach to songwriting where he's setting up a scene and setting up a situation and setting up a character that's not necessarily him. In this case, it's definitely him, but I always appreciate that aspect of his songwriting when he does it, which isn't often enough in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. He does a great job of it. And especially in this song. So, okay. Any final thoughts? Landlady Sula, did you get your landlady thoughts out on paper or on recording?
Yeah. The 2 points I wanted to make were terrible title and, elevation rhyme, like, you know.
Yeah. Ken Cunningham said, sounds a little bit like The Police is Every Breath You Take at the end, which, kind of just a refrain.
There's a bit of that. I can hear that.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And he said, everything he's given me, I'll let him slide on writing songs about the misses. So there you go. And presumably he cleared it with her, I guess, as far as a term of endearment. She's okay with it or whatever. So I guess in the end, that's all that really matters. But
this is the type of thing, though, I have to say. I wonder if this is the type of thing that makes the albums come out 4 or 5 years at a time because they argue over stuff like this. Please tell me there was an argument before they named this landlady, right? Like, maybe this is some of the holdup that we always get. Done with the music. The music's great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about landlady.
I always picture it being like there's arguments there where Larry gets involved in probably and arguments for Edge and maybe it's Edge, Bono, and Larry. But I picture Adam like opening up, getting the record for the first time.
In the corner sipping
and
tea.
He's like, he's after it's out. He's like, oh, landlady. Totally. That's what we're calling it. Sip of tea.
They told the story again on the Stern show about Bono throwing Larry's drum set during a gig. I've never heard that story. In the history of my years following them, I've never heard that, but man, I would love it if there was footage of that.
Which you can totally see them doing back in the day of like, especially like
right.
When, and Bono kind of like thinking Larry's being a jerk about something and when he's actually like trying to fix something and.
He was trying to fix his drum pedal or something and Bono was like, talking heads is in the audience. But yes, my point, back to my point. If they're arguing about stuff for years and years, I hope that at least somebody argued about this, even though they didn't win, obviously.
What if this was the best option that they thought of?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have been worse.
Feels like it could have been a B-side or a Sweetest Thing, post-album thing or something.
But the song is good. That's the thing. The song's good. It is a good story. It's a lovely story, but anyway.
Yeah. All right. Next up, The Blackout. Colin. No, Christopher. Who's
I think it's Colin. It's Colin this time. Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah, defense, so like everybody has a C.
Like time zones with you.
Yeah.
So kind of just taking a cue from what you just said, Chris, about Landlady maybe could have just been a B-side. Wouldn't it be great if this album really did go from The Little Things to Give You Away right into The Blackout? I mean, I could see that in the show. I could see that in the show, like closing that first set with Little Things, coming back for the encore on The Blackout. I mean, that would be phenomenal. I know a lot of people are predicting this to be the show opener, which would also be cool because it's got that opening, that. Like Zoo Station.
I would love that.
Joey Ramone riff. That would definitely work, no question. I'm happy to say that I still love this song, even though I thought I'd be disappointed that we wouldn't hear like the noise of the crowd in the background, like we heard when they first released it with the video version, when you heard the crowd in there. I like that. I thought that was cool. I think it still works on its own. I think it's one of those that I love singing along with in the car, like at the top of my lungs. I'm not embarrassed to do that with this song, so I'm not crazy about the remix. It's on the B side of the Record Store Day release, but I again, lyrics aside, because I think throwing the names in there, I just think is super cheesy and
I agree.
I'm with you on that one.
Totally agree.
That's where I am a little embarrassed to sing along, you know. Just like, do you really have to say Jack?
You're shouting out names.
Oh no, man. I point to the car next to me. Hey, Ned.
Right, exactly. Your name's Jack, right? Okay, good.
Yeah, it gets the 10-year-old, 7-year-old vote because my two boys love it. Like, that's the song because of those things. Like, it's so, which obviously is not Bono's target audience there. But
kind of is. He's going for the young audience, he says. So.
I don't know if they listen at 4-0. I don't know how you say that on Twitter, but I tweeted something about that, and they replied actually that there is reference to that I forget which names are in Blake's Songs of Experience and Songs of Innocence, or the way around. They are actually some of those names are used, so there's a potential that it's a deeper meaning, but I feel like sometimes those kind of things with U2 are like a happy coincidence that they stumble across, and then they're like, oh, that would totally work here or whatever. And then we all like spend podcasts
of the Paul Simon song.
Yeah. That's what In the Slipstream said. Get on the bus, Gus.
Just get on the bus, right. Gus. Yep.
Yeah. Totally. It's hard to get, once you get past that. And like, I think Christopher, you said the Adam Clayton's little triplet note hook or whatever at the start of each line.
Oh,
is just
my
like,
God. Yes.
I'm like, oh,
Adam on this song is huge Adam fan here. And when I first heard, I was so excited for Songs of Innocence when I first heard and watched the Facebook video, because the first thing it's aside from Edge's guitar, and Edge does some awesome, awesome sounds on The Blackout, but this is Adam's song, period. I mean, he drives this, and his bass is, it's aggressive, it's overdriven, it's funky, it's sexy. I love it. I love it.
Okay, then I brought this theory up one last time, and this is the last time I'm mentioning it for any people who hate conspiracy theories. But I was wondering with Adam Clayton, how much of it is Edge playing the bass and giving Adam, because Adam just feels like this is a purely like judging by the book by its cover, or whatever. He looks laid back. And even on stage, like messing up things like With or Without You or whatever sometimes, like I kind of doubted his like ability, and like I want to believe, and at the end of the day, I don't care. Like I'll love the band. I'll love listening on live and all that kind of stuff. I'm just curious as a musician where like if, because I wouldn't put it past the band to like, who cares who comes up with the riff, if it's Larry or Bono or Adam or Edge, and then Edge plays it live or whatever, who cares, right? But how much of it do you think is Edge like saying, okay, this is the riff, this is what you're going to do? Because it almost, like we were saying, Adam's gotten better suddenly.
Yeah.
And it's like, did Adam die and he got replaced by... No, I'm just kidding. But like,
stop.
I'm just kidding.
Still, well, no. Came up with New Year's Day, please.
Oh, I know.
I've read that, you know, Adam takes lessons and you know, talks playing bass with people when they're not on tour. So, I mean, these guys are still honing their craft. And...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're pushing 60, and, you know, Bono's voice sounds better than it has in a while, and Edge is still on point. So these guys are still honing their craft. So while I do have suspicions about, you know, the origin and, you know, whatever. You know, I think he can play it, and
yeah,
this coming tour, I think we're going to see it.
Yeah, and I don't, just to clarify, and then I'll put this to rest forever, I don't have any doubt about his ability to play. And I, it's more just the curiosity of my, curiosity as a musician of who, how the studio, just how it all works. And I'd love to be a fly in the wall, no pun intended, of the recording process and how that all has gone. Because, yeah.
Did you watch when they, remember during, was it All That You Can't Leave Behind? I think it was when they had the studio cam. Did you watch that, Chris, at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember some of it anyways. Yeah. So,
because you did get to see how stuff, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week kind of stuff, but you did see how they work off of each other. And there are ideas exchanged. Of course, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you can trace the nucleus of one specific, I'm sure you can, of one specific riff. Was it you, Adam?
Yeah. If Adam ever comes on the show, I'll put that to him. Okay. There we go.
Yeah. Just ask him.
Yeah. All right. I'm guessing another favorite of Christopher's, Love Is Bigger Than Anything in Its Way.
Yeah, you know, it's been,
is it a Tears or is it a,
no, this is really good. You know, just 2017 has been such a weird and heavy year, and you know, and one of the reviews that I read, you know, criticized this album for splashing love all over the place as kind of a banal,
like,
concept.
A bad thing.
Yeah, but I hello, A, it's Bono, duh, he's going to sing about love, and love in all forms, right? And two, we need a message like this now more than ever. Like this, because things are so dark in the real world, they're so heavy, and they're so cantankerous, and they're so contentious, that we need just someone to say, you know what, just forget it all, love each other, and it's going to be fine. And he does it on this song, and it's another song where it swells to a big, to big climax. And I love that stuff.
There's your title. It swells to a big climax.
There is, I mean, there's a part of that. Like, I think I read the same review. I forget where it was.
I think it was in the New Yorker.
Yeah. The New Yorker. Yeah. They were there, yeah, convincing some people to go listen to something else or whatever. And it's like, what? I don't get, I understand that criticism of U2 in terms of like, oh, they're still on about that. But also like, what else would they be doing at this stage, especially? But, and are you so cynical? Is the world so cynical that we can't have some of that, like the light, the love, the, I don't know. That's, I'm really resonating with that too, Christopher, this album coming out when it did, the way it did, and as heavily produced as it is or not, trying to like give up some of that crappy cynicism that I carry, I know, and not give into like the, not like loving it just because it's you too. Like there's still room for criticism. We've been going for an hour and whatever and criticizing lots of it, but yeah, letting go of that sort of darker side almost as we lead into Star Wars.
I have to.
Yeah. So,
they're just
so
damned often, if anyway. They do and damned if they don't.
Yeah.
Well, right. Well,
I mean,
know,
the first half of their career was anger, and people hated them for being angry all the time, right? And then Octane Baby comes along, and they're like, what'd you do? Why'd you change your sound? You're you too. Whatever.
Well, and, you
also,
know,
also that's like, I mean, sorry. No. You know, they take a lot of cues from the Beatles. And the Beatles, you know, one thing Paul McCartney said that he's really proud of with being with the Beatles is how much of their songs are about love and are about positive things.
Yeah,
And that's why their legacy has lasted as long as it has. And I think this is just kind of one of those albums. It reminds me of Abbey Road in a way, you know, which was an album that ends with them saying, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. And I think that's that was a great note for the Beatles to go out on. Technically, you know, I know Let It Be came out after that, but anyway.
But you were just waiting for me to correct you.
Yep, I knew that was coming. And every other listener. But so I think like they're just kind of, I think they sort of look at it, this album in that kind of way, this sort of late career album that's going to go out on a positive note. And yeah, I think now is the time for that.
All right, I think we just stop then. That was maybe we should go on. No, I'm just kidding. yeah, I think just the unabashedly positive, which, yeah, like I said, cynic in me wants to hate the song for being cheesy, but the optimist in me loves it like crazy. And so whatever, just like the opening kind of like, it's, I don't know if it's a vocoder or whatever, like a bit of an effect on this vocal that sort of like synth sounding vocal on it.
It was awesome.
Yeah. It's just like, I cannot wait to hear this live and just sing along with 40,000 other people who are in love with the song, in love with the band, in love with whatever. And chat room in the slipstream says, I wish there was a callback to Sleep Like a Baby. I'll just let you, I'll throw that one in there for you and let you deal with the consequences of that one. I can't wait to hear it. So, and again, Adam Clayton all over this one, loved it. Whether it's bass pedals or bass or whatever he's playing.
Doesn't matter.
Whether he thought of it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I have no doubt on these ones that total Adam Clayton. It's the, yeah. All right. Finally, in the standard album version, I guess, is track number 13 called 13, There Is a Light, which kind of for me is the similar to the Love Is Bigger Than Anything in Its Way, where I wasn't totally prepared for the spoiler warning here. If you somehow have made it this far and haven't heard the track, the song For Someone callback in it, because it was like listening and then it was like, oh, I love this. Why do I love this so much already? And then it was like, oh yeah, of course, it's a Song for Someone, right? And
I already know this song.
Yeah, it's totally there. But just like American Soul American Soul and sort of the callbacks where it's just like obvious. They're not trying to hide it or pretend like they're I don't know, like they don't have any inspiration left and they're not very creative anymore or whatever. It's like obviously they're doing this intentionally. Similarly with 13, I think, I love the way, if the album ended there, if I hadn't bought the deluxe version and they ended there, I would be happy with this as an album. And just kind of the way the drums kind of disappear underwater almost as they fade out and things like that. So, that's my 13 rant. Anybody else have some 13 thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was not a huge fan of Song for Someone, but I love that they brought back
Where's the
verse
hang up
here. I love that they brought back the chorus here and tied everything together at the end with this. It's so beautiful here. And I also love that, you know, he throws in the line, guard your innocence. You know, just calling back to just the name of that first album. And just at the end of the day, the message to me, I take it as, you know, just don't hang on to that part of you that's not yet 100% cynical about everything.
Yeah.
just try to keep that sort of that lightheartedness or that sort of childlike wonder about you. And I just think that's one of the many beautiful sentiments in this song and the song previous that the album goes out on, that I just think is just wonderful.
Yeah, it's almost like when you know the context of at least how Bono's promoting the album anyways, as like a letter to people he loves and sort of what if he wasn't around to hear it, and a message to his kids and all that kind of stuff. When you wrap it up in that packaging, then it's just like, I think that's probably where, I'm guessing, Christopher, too, it's hitting you too. It's just that idea of like you look at your kids or your parents or your loved ones or whatever and any of that kind of stuff. And it's just like, how can you not have at least just a twinge of some emotion
here? Well, yeah, I mean, it's all messages that I'm trying to teach my kids. You know, love is bigger than anything, it's way, and you know, you don't take it lying down. You got to fight back, and you got to be brave. And you know, love is a good thing, but you got to be strong too. I mean, those messages are all over this album, which is, I think, one of the main reasons why it's connected with me so strongly, so quickly.
All right, so that's the album official, like I guess the standard edition. There's the deluxe edition, which includes the Ordinary Love Extraordinary Remix or mix. And I don't know if it's worth going too far into discussion of that one, but I guess it probably wouldn't have been discussed in any of the previous episodes about it. But obviously the track is very important to you too. They keep sort of including it in various places, inserting it in various ways. I like the song. I like the mix. I don't feel like it feels out of place in a way. I mean, having just talked about how love is important, obviously it's a very obvious fit in that sense, but just the music or style, or I don't know, something about it doesn't totally fit in the album for me. And so my playlist actually of the new album includes a playlist that doesn't have Ordinary Love included, but anybody else with some comments on Ordinary Love? Or
I'm the same way. The album ends at 13. That's it.
And then, the next bonus track on the deluxe edition is Book of Your Heart. And this one, actually, I've seen a lot of like sort of love for from on Twitter and stuff from various fans who are like, can't wait to hope they do it live. And for this is their song that's really grabbing them. For me, it's not something about the chorus, the book in the Book of Your Heart, something about the way it's sung, or I don't know, it didn't catch my ear right away, but maybe what about you guys, you folks getting shaking heads? No,
not so much.
I'm still digesting the first 13. I haven't made it to the back half of to the deluxe tracks yet. But you know, it's only a matter of time. But I'm still chewing on the album proper.
It feels like a song lyrically. It feels like there's depth there to it, like in contrast. But I had written down it has potential. So I don't know. I'll have to keep listening.
Has potential.
But you have, so Christopher, have you not even listened to Lights of Home, St. Peter's String version?
I have. I mean, I have listened to the deluxe version all the way through. It's okay. Just, I haven't sat down to really get into the deluxe tracks yet.
That's fair. Cause that's, for me, that's my favorite song, I think, on the album. If you call it the album, I don't know. I would replace it, the original version, with this one if I could. But we've talked about Lights of Home enough, but just this, the mix of it anyways, is worth the upgrade alone.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole U2 with strings again is just like,
they need to do more of that. I really wish they would do more of that.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And whether it's, I don't know if it's produced, you know, whether it's live strings, like the BBC orchestra preview we got with All I Want Is You, which just looks amazing. And so hopefully they potentially do something like that with this, song where they play it live with some sort of string. I'm sure on tour it won't be like a full string orchestra, which would be hilariously awesome if they did bring an orchestra along with them on tour. But if they do, even if they did it at the BBC thing, I don't know if the track list for that has been released or not. But and then finally, the You're the Best Thing About Me, U2 versus Kygo remix, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
No,
I'm ambivalent about remixes in the first place.
Agreed. Yeah,
I like them as B-sides, as whatever, but included in this, it feels like, and we heard most of it already or whatever and stuff. And so, but yeah, it would have been nice to stand on the St. Peter String version of Lights of Home, if anything, and go out on that. But Ken Cunningham said, fun on the treadmill, which I don't know if it's about Lights of Home or the Kygo.
Probably Kygo.
Yeah, I would think so.
Guessing.
No. So, all right. So I guess we can go around the roundtable in final sort of words, thoughts on Songs of Experience now that you've spent an hour and change discussing it and however many times you've listened to it. We'll do the same clockwise here around. So Christopher, your thoughts, closing thoughts?
I think Songs of Experience as a whole works better for me than Songs of Innocence did as a whole, but Songs of Innocence as little pieces, I think, worked pretty well for me. I love Songs of Experience. I love it.
All right, Christopher, or Colin, sorry.
I think this helps make Songs of Innocence a better album when you put the two together as one whole piece. Looking at it that way, I just think that it gives it more of an epic scope to it that wasn't really there before. But now it's seeing it shape up into something, this sonically extraordinary. I love this whole project more now than I did when the first half of it came out. So, yeah.
All right, and Tasula, how about you?
And I'll just kind of snippet what I said in my written review. For me, Songs of Innocence still works better, and I think that's because they're revisiting the past and they've had 50 years to reflect on everything, so that work felt more done and sure of itself to me than this one. And I feel like there's a few songs on this album where they're trying too hard to appeal to the younger audience. That's not the type of U2 that I love, so I like Songs of Experience, but I still think I like Songs of Innocence more.
Yeah, and I would echo a lot of what Christopher said in terms of just that idea of it, to me, it feels more a cohesive a whole, even though like when I read about the production and recording, how it can't possibly be, because it just feels like it's so scattered, but more so than Songs of Innocence, which feels like, yeah, like there's really bright moments, but doesn't have the cohesive. If we didn't see what's the tour, Song of Innocence and Experience tour. I've been talking too long. If we hadn't seen that, I think the album Songs of Innocence on its own wouldn't hold up as well. But having seen it in context of the Innocence and Experience tour, it gives a whole lot more texture to the whole album that I enjoy, which is true for me of a lot of U2 albums, where the concert tour kind of shapes my listening experience of the album. And so that's why I guess I'm hopeful and excited for the Experience and Innocence tour as it relates back to this album, but maybe it'll be the opposite effect now, where they come away not liking the album as much or something. But yeah, it doesn't seem to be the, I don't think that'll be the case. So
I'm interested to see what songs get better live and vice. Cause like last time I think I was on record saying every Breaking Wave was my second to least favorite on Songs of Innocence. And then when they took it on tour, it became one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, and we're all seeing at least one concert on the tour, right? Everybody's got tickets somehow, managed to find a ticket.
Got a few.
I do not have tickets yet, but that's not because I haven't tried. It's just not in the cards yet. I'm traveling for other research purposes, so all of my funds are are being funneled elsewhere. But fingers crossed. So we'll
see. All right. Well, hopefully you'll get to be at a show, and hopefully all of you out there listening, watching, et cetera, will get to be at a show on the tour, and look forward to that. We very likely will be having another episode of this discussion with a few other at U2 staffers who are anxious to talk, and I'll do less talking and let more people, other people talk on that one. Yeah, if you are looking to follow along with what we're doing here on the podcast, you can follow twitter.com/ATU2 is the @U2 Twitter account, to where we'll notify you of when we go live recording. We usually record live on Wednesday nights, Thursday afternoons for the when we have some of the UK non-North American folks on. And over on the goodstuff.fm podcast network, which I help run, that's where all the archives of the recordings are. goodstuff.fm/ATU2 is where you can go, and you can see all the past episodes. If this is the first one you're listening to, there's a whole, like I said, a whole bunch of episodes talking about all the previous albums, going through song by song, that so maybe unearth some hidden gems that maybe you've lost a love for or something along the way. What else am I forgetting? facebook.com/ATU2.com, I think. And of course, @U2.com. So going around the round table, if folks want to tweet you some follow-up thoughts in a very polite and constructive way, Christopher, where can they find you?
Twitter @CJSEndrinal and also on Facebook.
Okay. Colin, how about you?
I'm more active on Facebook, so Colin Suter. That's two L's with Colin. But if you want to contact me on Twitter, it's @Colin_Suter, SOUTER.
You always remind me of, you sound like disgruntled person who was forced to have a Twitter account. You're the landlady of Twitter.
No, I was forced to have a Twitter account when I when I joined up with RogerEbert.com, and Chaz Ebert said you need a Twitter account. When Chaz Ebert tells you, you do it. So
nice. Got the name drop in there too at the same time. Sweet. All right, then Tasula.
Yeah, Larry told me. Yeah. I'm at Tasula, and I have been at Tasula since Twitter was pretty much invented. So
all right.
Send all your usual hate mail there.
And I'm iChris on Twitter. And feel free to tweet us. We use the hashtag AskAtU2. You don't have to tweet anybody particularly. You can just tweet it out into the world, and it will get grabbed. There was a couple of tweets now that I mentioned that I realized I forgot to look at because I had my notes somewhere else. But @GeekGHappyDance said, damn fine album. My faves keep changing, which is a good sign. But for now, there are little things, the crescendo, Lights of Home, especially the strings version, Summer of Love, love the sultry vibe. Get Out of Your Own Way, Sugary Pop, But I Can't Help Myself, Showman Fun, and Blackout Rock. @Joel Airson said, any idea what happened to The Morning After Innocence, a song that Bono gave us lyrics to? Did it morph into another song on the album or disappear? Does anybody know? I don't even know what they're referring to, so I'm
sure. I know what they're referring to, but I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah. @Chris Perry said, tour related, but I think Inhaler would be the best tour opener. Talk about your experience in Innocence.
Definitely. Theme. Yes, yes. Eli's band, Eli Houston.
Oh, that's what they were. I was like, is there some obscure beam?
That's Inhaler Dublin. And they're fantastic. They sound like young U2. I mean, they're very shocking. Like
80s popish.
Hmm.
Nice.
But in a good way. I mean, they sound like their own thing. Well, but definitely reminiscent.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So, and there's probably other stuff in there. We'll cover all your tweets in the next episode and keep those coming. Hashtag Ask IU2. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye for now.
Thanks.